All right. Hi, everyone. Welcome to the timingresearch.com crowd forecast news for this special earnings focused episode. It's April 26, 2024. We are recording this right at the close, 4 p.m. Eastern time, and this is episode number 426. So my name is David Cosmeter. I'm the creator of timingresearch.com, and you should be seeing my screen and charts right now. But today I've arranged for Dean Jenkins of Follow Me Trades to join us. Great to have him back. It's been a while. Also, Dan Passarelli of markettaker.com. Great to have you here too, Dan. And Jim, the option professor of optionprofessor.com, is back to moderate. So I'm going to turn it over to him.
Okay, great. And thanks for you guys being here today, Dean and Dan. Markets have been very wild this week, way down and way up. So we've got a lot to talk about. And before we get going, how about a little background on you guys, a little introduction on what you do and things you do offer for the investors. So let's start out with Dean. What do you got, Dean, to give a little review, a little background?
Yeah, my name's Dean Jenkins. I'm the founder of FollowMeTrades.com, and I'm a trader. I enjoy trading the financial markets and teaching other people how to do it. And we offer a picks alert service and then a community we call Real Traders Club, where people contribute ideas, we analyze them together and publish a watch list. So trading the market myself and, you know, have fun talking to other traders while we do it and sharing what we know.
You bet. And at the end, of course, you'll be able to explain to people how they can get in touch with you and learn more.
Yes.
Dan, a little background on yourself and what's going on at your company.
Yeah, sure. I'm Dan Passarelli, and I'm founder of Market Taker Mentoring, and I've been doing this for, well, I've been in the options business for 30 years as of this year. Holy cow. No, it'll be 31 years later this year. Oh my goodness. And what we do at Market Taker is we help traders reach financial freedom through option trading. And one of the main things that we do is earnings trading with options. So I'm really excited to get into this today because trading earnings is my favorite thing to do.
You mean trading off the earnings reports, right?
Yeah. We have a very specific niche strategy.
Because we had a lot of action this week. I think we had 40% of the S&P announced this week. So that's a big hump. But next week is no bore either. You got 9 million of them from Lilly to Apple to Devon Energy, all different types of companies. So it's going to be another big week for earnings. So let's hear what you got to say later in the broadcast on that. Dean, do you mostly do the actual stocks, or you do a lot of the options, or what do you think?
I do all my analysis on the underlying charts.
Right.
So technical trading based on a pretty simple, repeatable set of indicators. But when we actually take a trade, I'm a swing trader. I take directional trades. I like taking the trade with options, simple strategy, you know, bullish move, long the calls, bearish move, long the puts.
Right.
We do have, you know, an option strategy. They're a little more complicated, earnings strategy for options, a little more complicated because you don't know what's going to happen.
No.
My main play here is, you know, swing trading, bullish, bearish moves, long calls, long puts.
Gotcha. And of course, when people are working with risk capital on that, you know, they're probably trying to take a relatively smaller amount of money and turn it into a big one. And of course, buying the option at the right time is one way to do that.
Yes.
You know. All right. Well, let's start out, you guys, and talk about the S&P. It obviously had a very big week where it got dumped when Meta came out with the bad guidance. And then Google and Microsoft said they're spending like drunken sailors. And so, and of course, Meta did as well. So we're right back up to, to the highs of the week. So what are you thinking on the markets right now, Dean? S&P.
Yeah, so I'm going to share my screen, if that's all right.
Yep, yep.
Whenever I talk about a chart, I want to have a chart. Now let me see if I'm trying to share, make sure it's the right screen. Is this working? There we go.
We can see you fine. There you go.
All right, you should see my Thinkorswim SPY chart here.
Yes, we do.
Yes.
Okay. So I'm showing, you know, just under a year's worth of data for the S&P 500. I like trading the SPY rather than the actual SPX. I mean, the volume of 57.9 million shares traded hands today. Deep market, great options market, you know, three times weekly contracts. So, you know, we see this move up that started last fall, mid-October last year. And that was a, you know, logarithmic move. And, you know, just what we know, you know, from looking at thousands of charts and watching the market for 30 years, right? There's typically a correction after an impulsive move like that. And, you know, it started a month or two ago, pretty good move down, and we've come up off that. But what we know is corrections, you know, again, these are all probabilities, not certainties, but corrections typically move in an ABC, right? So this would be an A, this is some kind of C, or this would A,
yeah.
E, and the so we're looking for some kind of C movement. And so we've got a Fibonacci retracement. You know, I'll just redraw that just for fun here, right? You know, we just look at a Fibonacci retracement from the low, you know, to the high, and we're looking for a 38.2 to 61.8 retracement. That's these green lines. So we think the midpoint there is about 468 on the SPY is probably where we would see this go. Right now, we had some pretty strong earnings. You know, like I said, Meta kind of melted down, right? Pretty funny. Mark Zuckerberg's kind of changed his story because last year it was okay. Yeah, we're spending, you know, too much money on toys for engineers. Let's get lean. And they had a huge rally on that. And then he came back again and, you know, said, yeah, we're going to spend much more money on toys for engineers. And the market did not like it. But then, like I said, Google and some others, you know, the overall, you know, if you look at FactSet, the earnings have overall beat the forecast pretty well. They're pretty strong, right? But that's also a mixed bag because, you know, we have high inflation. The Fed thought it was under control. We're going to cut rates, and then CPI and then PCE and GDP and earnings are coming in really, really strong, saying, maybe it's not under control. So at some point, you know, I think the market wakes up and goes, well, we ain't getting no rate cuts this year, right? And inflation's still a problem. And, you know, the market takes the elevator down. So we're looking for a C-leg correction on the SPY, which would be normal, healthy, part of the cycle, and with a target, you know, somewhere down in this range, 468 on the SPY.
And you would say 504 to 515 would be the range where it might stop on the rally here?
Say that again?
In other words, the B we're looking at here, would you say it could be somewhere in the 504 to 515 range?
Yeah, we've got the 50-day moving averages, this line I'm highlighting. So that's like 511. We can actually see the Ichimoku cloud has turned red because of this down move. So that indicates a change in trend. And this looks like a pretty good resistance level, this 50-day at this time. Right? Probabilities, no certainties. But that looks like somewhere in here, pretty good reversal level. And now we're looking for that C leg down.
And where's that 50-day at?
Sorry?
The one you just mentioned, what was that average at? Ballpark? Oh, 511?
511, yeah.
Okay. It's just reference points, you know how it is, but it doesn't look like an unreasonable one.
Yeah.
So basically, you'd be planning your strategy to maybe start taking advantage of some puts that have gone down in price dramatically during this advance, and then basically try to buy the puts at a low premium. And then if you get that C move, they could really go through the roof.
That's right. I like, you know, on the SPY, you know, we're looking for a, you know, couple weeks to a month move, you know, down to this target. So I would typically trade the monthlies. I like going about 45 days out. And at the point you make your entry, I just take first strike in the money on the SPY. And that works pretty good. So any reversal here gets below this cloud. If we get down, you know, what it closed at 508.26, you know, Monday, if it opens and holds below that, I think that's a good entry. This red line,
What was that entry level you're talking about? Underneath where on Monday?
You know, just under the close, under today's close.
Oh, under if it's down on the day.
Yeah, if it opens Monday down and stays down, looks like it's going to close down toward the end of the session. I think that would be a good trigger for an entry.
Right.
And then I've got this red line, a prior high, right? So we got low, lower high, low, lower high, right? If it goes above 515.83, then okay, it didn't happen. Right. That's a disqualifying level. If I were to take this trade on Monday and it went up to here, I would close it. Say, okay, that didn't work out.
Yeah.
And you take your position size and go, how much would I lose at that stop? Use risk control, be smart. Right.
I got you. Sounds good. And that's good. And great analysis. I love it. Now I'm going to we're going to come back. Can we go back and forth? You guys rather than one guy doing all the talking for a long time.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So I'm going to run over to Dan, and Dan's more futures oriented, I believe. Aren't you, Dan?
No, mainly equity options.
Oh, you don't do the E-mini S&P?
Not really.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, throw your screen up there and see if your analysis is how do your analysis on it and see what it looks like.
Yeah, all right. You can see my screen, I think, right? So from a technical standpoint, I guess there's a couple of interesting things going on. And I'm just going to add to what Dean was saying about the 50-day moving average. None of my trades are 50 days long, but I look at the 200-day and the 50-day moving averages as really big support or resistance levels. And in this case, the 50-day moving averages acting as resistance for the time being, unless of course it gets permeated, and then we could see that that resistance not holding and just have a reversal of fate and Bob's your uncle. But we also have the 21-day moving average crossing, just kissing the 50-day moving average today. So that's a bit of a bearish technical signal. And we've got all these like little mini support levels all the way down. Especially a big one here. But to me, like, I feel like the fundamental story is the more interesting one, and really the psychological fundamental narrative, where we constantly have this butting heads of the economy doing well, and it's been doing arguably too well, except for the most recent GDP print, versus, of course, inflation, which is just still too darn high. And that's just kind of been a potential drag on the market. But what I found really, really interesting this week is that the market seems to care so much more about earnings. Meta just took down the whole market the other day, and we had Microsoft and friends take the market up today. And I feel like the rest of this earnings season is really what's going to be the biggest driver. And it's that what I would call psychological fundamental narrative.
Okay. Now, I was wondering, since you guys have ideas on how to play the earnings, we start out Monday with Lilly and Coca-Cola, SMCI is on Tuesday. That's going to be wild. You've got McDonald's, all kinds of companies coming up. Do you guys have any stocks that you think there's some kind of a play on for the earnings next week? And I'll start with Dan on that, since his chart's already up.
Yeah, so I am of the mind, and if I'm not mistaken, I think maybe Dean alluded to this a little bit, but I'll let him clarify that after. But I am of the mind that it's really darn hard to predict direction going into earnings. Now, that said, the things that I look at direction on earnings for is just to guide the market, like the conversation that we just had. But as far as individual earnings plays, I find it very, very easy to predict what can happen with implied volatility. And for those of you who are maybe newer to options, or maybe you haven't really dug into implied volatility yet, what that is it's a sort of like extra component to option prices, where when there's just more demand for options, it drives the price up, just like more demand for anything. And so what happens is options tend to get very, very expensive right before a stock announces earnings. And in a lot of cases, they become overpriced, which creates an opportunity, right? The only reason we would take any trade is because we believe that the price is wrong, that the option is mispriced. So we see like all these little mispricings, sometimes big mispricings, leading up into earnings, and then they sort of correct themselves right afterwards. And so just from a very high level standpoint, what I do is I go through and I look at stocks that have earnings coming out either after the close today and any given day or before the open tomorrow. And I analyze their option premiums and just see which ones are either too expensive or too cheap, and then put on a strategy to take advantage of that. So some of the interesting, a really interesting one is SoFi, which is one of the very rare ones that is going to announce before the open Monday.
Oh,
yeah. Really not super common. So I don't care about what the chart is. It doesn't matter, because I'm not predicting direction, but what I do care about are time spreads. And this is one where, I mean, geez, you could buy the 14-day, 7-day time spread for like a couple of pennies, risk just a couple of pennies. And when that front implied volatility, the May 3rd volatility collapses, there's the potential to make some pretty good profits on that with extremely low risk. Now, I'm just basically using that as an example, and there's a whole bunch of other things to talk about. And frankly, I don't take trades like this if the stocks are under $25 a share regardless, but just to kind of give you an idea as to the things that I look at.
Can I answer a quick question? On SoFi, I have a lot of moving averages around, let's call it $7.40 and about $7.80. So it's in a 40-cent window, and it's been kind of in a flat window between March and April. So alluding to what you were trying to explain to people, since nothing has really happened, the implication is that nothing will continue to happen, which means the premiums, as you're saying, are pretty cheap. So if you were to strangle that type of thing, like where you buy a 8 call and a 750 put short term, what kind of money would be involved in that?
Well, I mean, if somebody's looking for a strangle and you know, looking for that breakout, I mean, and that's a pretty easy one to analyze. I like to buy just a little bit more time than I need, but not too much more time than I need, and worry about the volatility crush that happens. But I mean, look, you can buy the 8 strike pretty much at the money straddle for, what does this come out to? $1.13, right? No, $1.23. So you just look at $1.23 from here. We're talking $9. Or $1.23 south. I mean, that's kind of a big move. I mean, we're talking about, I mean, what I like to do is just take $1.23 divided by 786. So 1.23 divided by 7.87. You need like a 15.5% move to see that materialize, to make a profit.
I'm on board with you there, Dan. To play, you know, the actual earnings event with a straddle strangle, right? To make it work, you got to have a huge move, right? Because you get, you know, going into it, you get the IV rush,
right?
Drives the price up. And then instantly after the event, you get the crush, right? The contracts, both sides lose IV dramatically. And so you need it to move into the money, you know, the winning side to move into the money with Delta and make a huge profit and offset the loss on the other side, which is probably going to be close to 100%. So, you know, like, you know, if you'd known what was going to happen with Meta, you could have done well, right? But, you know, there's two big variables in an earnings announcement. It's like, okay, what are they going to say?
Yeah.
And then what is the market going to do? And you can't predict either, right? If you knew what they were going to say.
They got a guidance too, right?
Yeah. Right. If you knew what they were going to say and you traded out, you'd go to jail.
Right. You know what's interesting on this one, though, Dean, is that the short interest is 17% of the stock, and the green line is turning up. And how does the cloud look on yours? Does it look like the cloud's turning up?
I don't have this one up.
Okay.
And you know, given that this one, you know, is in this channel, it wouldn't interest me in terms of trading into the event.
Yeah. It would be a gamble.
You know, like in the previous earnings, you can see it's had big gaps.
Yeah.
Right now, it seems to be, it's got a well-defined upper or lower boundary channel.
Yeah.
And so, again, if you're going to play it that way with a straddle strangle, taking, you know, both sides, hoping to get one side win, you got to have a big move.
Yeah.
So I do, you know, when it's my turn, I don't mean to take away from Dan, but I have a strategy. I like going up to earning, which is pretty cool. I got a candidate for that.
Yeah, no, we'll get into that. But Dan was going to go into more particulars on a couple of trades he actually thought were good. I just thought in this particular example, I'd look at, because I know it's been getting beat for a long time. So I figure there's Tom, Dick, and Harry short the thing. If the thing came out with any kind of good news, you know, popping up pretty dramatically. So if somebody just wanted to gamble on an 850 put, one side only, he probably wouldn't have to put up much. And with 17% short, you know, this thing could do something pretty decent on the upside, or you walk away with a limited risk.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But, you know, I got to tell you, Prof, the operative word there that you used, I think, is gamble.
No doubt about it. Yeah, no doubt about it.
Yeah, it's just so tough, man. But, yeah, you know, just piggybacking off Dean's comments about my comments, just going full circle here. I mean, needing a 15.5% move. I mean, in the last 2 years, the opening gap, which is really all that I care about, is from where it closed before earnings to where it opened after earnings.
Right.
We only had an opening gap of more than 15.5% once in the past 3 years, actually. We had, and last quarter was a 15.5% move. So I don't know. I mean, that's challenging. Actually, what I was kind of looking at, and, you know, it's kind of crazy to think this because lower priced stock have lower priced options, but I look at it from a calendar spread standpoint, where these 7-day options are very expensive relative to these 14-day options.
Right.
Because if I can buy a, here, let me model it out. I think a lot of people find this interesting. If I were to sell that one and buy this one, sense. I mean, geez, Louise, look, you get a profit, and there's actually.
So, you're talking about selling the front and buying the back?
Yeah.
Oh, well, I think that would make a lot of sense, because if it does pop, you got the one in the back covering you anyway.
Yeah. Now, this is sort of like the oversimplified version here. I model out volatilities and do some comparisons with what I call the modeled and durable gap. But I mean, geez Louise, like, you look at this, there's a really great chance of profit here, just looking at the simplified version. So
I like that play rather than the
outright.
The straddle strangle. Yeah.
Yeah. No, I'm just thinking the outright. There's no way I'm really interested in puts on something that is coming up from the bottom with a 17% short interest. That doesn't sound like the put opportunity. So this one would be taking advantage of an up move, right?
Really up or down, you know, which is like really the beauty of it. As long as it doesn't go above 964 or below 678, you win. It's a $3 range on an $8 instrument. I mean, holy moly.
Yeah. That's very reasonable. Well, that's an interesting strategy, no doubt about it. And definitely, this is why after the meeting here, you know, people have got to talk to you directly, because this is not peanut butter and jelly here. You have a little bit of talking to do. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I get what you're doing in about 2 seconds, but I've been doing it like yourself for decades. But a guy who's just learning or getting into it, you know, he should talk to you personally and walk through this thing one by one so they get it, you know?
Yeah, and you know, just to conclude, the one thing that I do want to share is I'm trying to make this simple for the listeners who aren't like super options.
Right.
Don't try this at home.
Yeah.
You know, without the extra.
All right, Dean, can you throw your chart up and give us that approaching to earnings report scenario that you were feeling good about?
Yeah. So hopefully that's you're seeing the toss screen again.
Yep. Oh yeah. You're up.
Okay. And I got Robin Hood. here's the earnings play I like. So Robin Hood is going to announce on May 8th. So we got 2 weeks before they announce. And I think Dan alluded to it, was going approaching the earnings event, we typically see IV rise. And so what I try to do is find something that's at least in some kind of modest uptrend. And we see on Hood, right? They had a big impulsive move. They had a correction. Now it's starting to head up, right? And so typically when I take a swing trade, you know, a directional move, you know, we're past earnings. We got two months before earnings. I'll go deep in the money, you know, a couple of strikes in the money and try to get my, you know, I like a delta, you know, 70 delta or something, because that's where it's going to make you the money is, you know, the thing moves, your delta pays you. But going into an earnings event like this, what I'll do is go even a strike or two out of the money, because we know going into the earnings event that implied volatility, IV, typically rises with expectation into the event of what's going to happen, right? There's going to be a big move one way or the other, right? And options are priced. There's intrinsic value, which is the degree to which the strike is in the money. And then there's extrinsic value, which is time and implied volatility. So what you really want to do is not pay the intrinsic value, but just take it just out of the money. And even if it goes sideways and price doesn't move, right, as we approach the earnings event, the total premium, because of the expected rising implied volatility, can actually go up. And then if it continues the uptrend and goes into the money, now you got Delta and IV both working for you. So you can get a double whammy and a nice win. But then, you know, for this strategy, then we close it before the earnings event, hopefully with a win, move on to the next. And this one, you know, Hood trades, you know, 8.1 million shares today. They trade, it's got
good liquidity. Yeah.
Very liquid, you know, good liquidity, you know, weekly options, you know, the open interest, you know, is in the thousands, right? Look at the the May 17, open contracts, thousands.
Yeah, whenever you're doing spread trading or double-sided trading, you have to have a good bid offer in there that you can work with, because it can't have a Mack truck driving through the differential, you know?
Yeah, and it's a good comment, Jim. And if people are interested and they start looking, right, you know, you look around the, you know, the at the money, right, like, you know, here at the close, $1.27, $1.23, $1.39, $1.36. Those are reasonably tight spreads. When you start seeing big spreads between the bid and the ask, right, almost certainly you're going to look over and see probably lower volume, right? It's not a deep liquid market, and you know you can get in. But it can be hard to get out at the price you want. So you want to take, you want to do this kind of stuff with really deep liquid market. But this is, I like this, you know, going into earnings trade where you can get a combination of both Delta and IV working for you on that contract premium and make some nice profit.
Let's do, each one of you can do an analysis on Apple, because Apple's coming out next Thursday and it had a big correction from $200 down to $165. I had that 165 neighborhood as a great place to buy Apple, but it's not exactly bouncing out of there like a Mexican jumping bean. So I'd love to hear what you guys got to say. And I'm sure a lot of listeners trade Apple. So let's talk about Apple.
Well, I got the screen, so I'll go if that's all right.
Yeah. And then, yeah, I was going to say, yeah.
And, you know, I use some fairly simple indicators. I use Dow theory, which is, you know, hey, a downtrend is by definition is low, lower high, low, lower high, low, lower high, low, lower high. Apple's in a downtrend, right? I use the Ichimoku cloud. It's red, indicating a downtrend. I got the 50-day moving average, 200-day moving, right? And I'll look at Fibonacci retracements and extensions, very simple Elliott way. Apple's in a downtrend, and that's undeniable. It is through prior support. The next important support level is not till here, right? So just on a technical, historical chart analysis basis, I would have no part of an Apple long. It would have to completely change direction, have a high, higher low, new high, probably get above, look how the 50 has been resistance. It'd have to get above all of that. So that's a long way off for me.
So you don't really have anything in between 160 and 165 neighborhood that would be somewhat support, really?
It's got to change trend. That's going to take a while.
Okay, because what do you call it? I was just looking at some longer-term charts with longer-term averages, and they've come down to that neighborhood. Now, that doesn't mean it has to hold, but this would be an area where, you know, if they got good news or good guidance on Thursday and it doesn't blow out 160 in the interim, it would be interesting to see, because, you know, people love this company. They just don't like the current news on it, you know?
Yeah, the only thing about Apple, which makes me a little leery of shorting Apple.
Yeah. Right?
Is they got more money in the bank than medium-sized countries.
Right.
Right. And they have a authorized stock buyback program larger than most small countries.
Yeah.
Right. They can go buy their stock and drive the price up if they choose.
Right.
There's and, a bit of distortion possible. So I probably won't short it, but I'm not going long until it proves its trend has changed.
And then there's one other thing I wanted to ask you, because I don't know if you follow, I think you follow the RSI, but I have kind of a large divergence from the first time it went down to 168 and then this recent low at 164. I've got a very large divergence in the RSI, which to me would indicate that it's ran out of steam on the selling side. Now, that might have explained why we've had a rally here, and that might all you get out of it. But do you show any kind of a relative strength divergence that might be of note?
I don't use RSI. Okay. I've got this price oscillator, which simply shows you the magnitude of the move, so you can look for that divergence.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And you can see that, you know, this initial move down here had more momentum, and we are, you know, even though the downtrend continues, we're losing momentum right in the downtrend. So that would be another reason to go, I don't know if I'm going to short that.
Right.
But again, it hasn't gone positive. We don't have a trend change to the upside, so I would not go long. I like to let trends prove themselves rather than going, I think this is going to or should happen. I go, prove to me that it's happening, and then I'll get a trade. And there's plenty of, you know, you don't have to predict the trend change, you can let it be proven, and then there's still plenty of profit to be made afterward.
Yeah, it's much more dangerous to play pick a spot than it is follow the crowd. Yeah. All right. Well, what do you see, Dan, on Apple, and how would you play it if you're going to play it? Because, you know, Thursday's coming and you guys are earnings traders a little bit here. So what are we going to do with Apple going into earnings on Thursday?
Yeah, yeah. Dean, you mind if I come near the screen here?
Dean, do you have to unshare? Yeah, I guess you have to unshare.
All right. Okay. So, I mean, there's a couple of interesting things here. I mean, one, honestly, like, earnings is my thing. So you're probably going to think that this is a crazy statement, but I usually don't trade a lot of these really high flyer tech stocks going into earnings. But well, the Apple's a little bit less of a high flyer tech stock these days. And arguably one of the reasons why I often shy away from them on earnings is something that's a little different in Apple. So because I'm usually doing these time spreads where a move too big up or down is the only bad thing that can hurt me. Apple actually kind of fits nicely into that paradigm because their typical gaps, I mean, the biggest gap they've had in the last 3 years from close to open with earnings sandwich in between is 4.1%, which is not really a super big move. Apple being, so moral to the story, as far as the earnings trade goes, we don't see that really huge disparity in implied volatility here. So, I mean, right now, I mean, I never put on any earnings trade until literally the hour before the market closes, before earnings comes out. So, I mean, I wouldn't really necessarily be positioning myself for it just yet anyway, but it is one that I'm going to watch on Thursday or maybe Wednesday night. I forget if it's AMC or BMO. But what I do find interesting, because in the process of going through these earnings trades, it forces me to pay attention to earnings and what they say. And that's really the operative thing. A lot of people don't realize this, is that what really drives the direction following earnings isn't what the earnings were. It's not that number. It's the words that are spoken in the earnings call afterwards, the webcast event. That actually, there's a study done that showed that is a great predictor of the direction of a stock in the couple of days following earnings. So that's, to me, even much more so than the technical lower highs, lower lows that Dean mentioned, is we're going to be interested to hear what they say on that earnings call. That's going to really telegraph and set the stage for where Apple goes after that.
Not unlike Tesla kind of thing.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Well, you guys, let's talk about a couple of other markets that I've had some success with, and one is in that gold and silver. Is there any? I had a whole bunch of that Newmont mining, which worked out this week. Well, you're up there, Dan. Do you have any gold stocks or gold market comments?
Except for the fact that gold's been on fire lately. I don't know how a metal can be on fire, but geez, look at that, man. So this, following earnings, this had earnings on the yesterday BMO before market open. And here, let me just pull that up again for those of you who can see this. The analyst estimates was 34 and a half cents. The actual was 55 cents, which is, what is that, like 40 or 60% higher? The average earnings beat this, like 77% of the S&P 500 stocks that announced earnings so far beat estimates. And the average beat was 8.4% above estimates. This one was just massively, massively above estimates. And so just, I think with the strength, you know, and having blasted through the 200-day moving average, which is a very, very strong resistance point for a couple of days. Now it becomes a very, very strong support with the 21-day moving average crossing up above it. I mean, it's a screaming bullish play. Not that I follow the gold market all that closely, but just the simple technical analysis and just what happened with earnings. Holy cow, man. If I'm playing this one, and actually, now that I'm looking at it here, hold on a second. The implied volatility on this is, it's pretty fairly priced. I mean, this is a nice potential call buying opportunity here for sure. And I'll kick that over to Dean if he wants to pick up from where I left off.
Yeah, I follow gold. Mm-hmm. Newmont's, that was an impressive result for sure. It's taken off. So I'm not going to chase that if it were to retrace, and get another opportunity, maybe. Mm-hmm. Gold itself, if I'm going to trade, a gold miner, I want to go see what the underlying thing is doing. That, that's not 100% correlation, but it's important. Gold was on a tear and then it dropped and went totally flat. So I'm not super focused on gold right now until it does.
Yeah, it's really too high to buy and too strong to sell. So you're kind of in a pickle.
Yeah.
XME is another one, though, that may have quite a future because it has some gold in there and it's got some copper in there and it's got some other metal. XME, there you go. That's been very good. I've been kind of riding that a little bit, infrastructure and everything else,
Mm-hmm.
And it's a one-stop shop to get a whole bunch of different stuff. And Newmont's a big thing in there. Freeport-McMoRan's in there. And Nucor is in there. So, you don't have a bunch of schleps in there. You got some pretty good companies,
Yeah. Yeah, it's in an uptrend. It's not bad. Putting in highs. That's probably a good entry point. Came down to support. Looks like it's heading up. And, the trend could continue.
How do you feel about energy since your chart's up? We'll start with you.
That was on my list because I thought, I was like, hey, if you want to share anything, we're watching. This is USO, right? And there's obviously individual plays. But one of the nice things with a big ETF like USO is you don't have to worry about earnings, right? Plug along. You do have to worry about geopolitical events. And, in terms of what could happen on the geopolitical stage, most of that would drive the price of oil up. In fact, most analysts are surprised it's not higher, right? And it's in an uptrend for sure. And we've had a nice little correction. Looks like it's heading up. There's some pretty well-respected analysts who are confident we're going to 100 for sure this year. And so that would, oops, what have I done? Now, that's not proven, but oil did its correction. It's starting to head up. If it opens up again Monday, I think I'm pretty bullish on oil and USO. And then you can go dig in. One of the cool things is you can go to the Spider Fund website. You can look up, what is the energy? XLE, maybe?
Yeah, XLE, OIH.
And you can go look up, you can go to the Spider website, for XLE.
Yeah.
They'll give you a list of the components or 2025 components, and you can do an analysis on an individual one. This is showing the same thing as USO, right? And this fits up on Monday. That could be a really good play.
And crude is trying to figure out if it wants to go through 85. If it starts doing that, then this thing could get on the bicycle.
Right.
There's a stock.
The other thing is, because I said up front, I thought the index had a good chance of going down. So if I'm looking for bullish trades, I want either things that are inversely correlated or have no correlation to the major indexes. So I think USO fits the bill, right? In fact, there may be an inverse correlation. And another one, if I'll just throw in there, which is not correlated and is starting to look good, is the cannabis.
Oh, yeah, MJ, yeah.
That's big pop, nice correction. If it can break out, right, it could take out that high. And my entry would be just break out of this channel, call that 394. That could be a good long and no earnings, right? So,
yeah, you don't have to worry about that. Hey, one last one before I switch over to Dan. ARM, ARM, used to be $160, went all the way down to $90. Now it's at 100. They got earnings coming out on May 8th. And, if they, don't all that spending is going into their neighborhood and their customers are as big as they get. And if those customers are getting people to spend money, this could be something.
I like this for the same play that we did Hood. It's in at least a gradual uptrend right now,
mm-hmm.
right? And we got earnings coming right up. You just take it a strike out of the money and try to get an implied volatility rise with a slight or to flat chart, and you're going to make some money. So that could be good.
Yeah, it's an expensive stock, but the ones that fly are expensive. You know what I mean?
Let's see. So what would that cost you if we took, the earnings are on May 8th. We take the May 10th. We're at 101. So if we went just out of, so it's $8. Yeah, a little spendy, right? So for one, that's not bad, though.
Yeah. But you might do a call spread if you really wanted to even it out a little bit.
You could, but if you're playing it the way I described, trying to get the IV rise, that's going to cancel out.
Yeah, defeats the purpose. All right, Dan, why don't you put your screen up here and give us a little idea of what you think of the oil markets and if you have any oil shares that you're kind of looking at. And, of course, do you see anything different in ARM that might be interesting, like going into earnings? Is there any of those plays you're talking about in there? But this would be something that could go nuts, and going nuts is what you don't want in that strategy you're talking about.
Yeah. Okay, let me get my screen up here. Share. Okay, there we go. Yeah, so just looking at XLE, which, again, is not oil. It's oil companies. But of course, they trade reasonably correlated. So the thing with oil, especially lately, one could argue, it's always the case, but especially lately, is that to me, the fundamentals become a lot more important. And especially with the tensions in the Middle East and such right now, that's been the big driver for oil prices. And so we can talk a lot about technical analysis, and it is important. We can and we should look at the technical analysis. But if tensions heat up more in the Middle East, we see oil go up. And if they start to abate, then we see oil go down. So to me, that's the big driver. So maybe there's enough said about that. Now, ARM becomes very, very interesting. So ARM, notwithstanding the things that we've talked about already, what I find interesting there is that it's trading at a PE ratio of 1300. So that means that investors are factoring in just years and years and years of earnings. The PE ratio, there's a lot of information just sort of packed in there. And in some ways it oversimplifies some things, but it makes it pretty easy to understand value. Now, if we go to a stock like Nvidia, you kind of see that same rise somewhat, a lot less volatile, but Nvidia has a PE ratio of 73, just massively smaller. I mean, don't get me wrong, it's higher than the S&P 500's PE ratio, which is around 23 or something like that. But ARM's is 1300. So holy moly, let me jump back on ARM here for a second.
When they announced on May 8th and they announced $9 zillion of revenue coming in, because I'm sure they must be getting some of this revenue that NVIDIA and Supermicro is getting. If in fact that happens, wouldn't that make that 1300 go way down right off the bat?
Well, yeah. When people look at the PE ratio, they really focus on the P part of that, the price of the stock. But right, the earnings of it is going to matter greatly, the E portion of that. So, yeah, I mean, we'll see. But when we're looking at 29 cents last quarter and 36 cents the quarter before that and such, I mean, geez Louise, they're going to have to blow the freaking doors off to get the P ratio down in line with NVIDIA, which they might.
Yeah, it's the kind of environment that it could happen because of the massive amount of cap spending going on. One last one for you, and then we'll switch it over to Dean. And this is, we're going to go fishing in the junkyard here. Put up Intel, INTC. And see if there's any godly reason to get into that thing.
Yeah, so that one, I mean, they have a PE ratio of 33, which is pretty much in line with what you would expect of just a standard tech stock in a normal time period. But let's take a look at the chart. So nice thing about looking at this one right now is that earnings are out. They blew the doors off earnings too. Analyst estimates was losing 3.5 cents. They actually made 18.5 cents, so they're in the 77% of companies that beat earnings and beat it by way more than the average 8.4%. So they've got this big gap here, right? And gaps are and Ironically, even though they beat the pants off of earnings, they gapped lower, made a bit of a comeback. I guess we can kind of call this a doji with a great deal of volume. Dojis represent uncertainty. And when you see all that volume and the price closing right around where it opened, there's still a whole bunch of uncertainty left. So we always look for gaps like this to be filled. I'm going to have to bring this out a little bit further in time here. We'll just go to the 3-year one. And I mean, this is a pretty darn nice support level, isn't it? So, I mean, I would be looking potentially more for a bounce. Let's look at the implied volatility here. Should be maybe around 40, 42, something like that. Boy, it's really, really cheap. I mean, holy cow. This is one, and so we're not talking about earnings plays, and so a straddle becomes more of a potential thing in that regard. And I'm just looking at it. I haven't looked at it until in a while. So, I mean, we can get into that for about a dollar. Not, let's just round it to $2 for just sake of talking about it. I mean, in 21 days, can this stock move $2 up to 33.84 or down to, you know, just looking at context, or down to $2 lower would be about 30. I mean, that might be, geez, I don't know. I'm going to have to study this a little bit more closely, pull out all my tools and tricks Monday morning. Yeah. But this one might actually be straddling.
All right, Dean, if you could put up your chart. And of course, I picked this one for two reasons. One, the thing is at a very low price. And you have a little background with this company. So I said, why not ask Dean what he thinks of Intel? Because he would have some basis to maybe have an opinion on it.
Yeah. So, yeah, I worked for Intel for 14 years. And it was a great experience. I learned a lot. Great company. And I have a lot of respect for the current CEO, Pat Gelsinger. I don't know if people know, but probably 20 years ago, Pat Gelsinger was a VP at Intel. And he wrote a book about combining faith and work and openly stated that his goal was to be the CEO of Intel. And subsequently left. And then was CEO of another company, and now here he is back at the helm. So, yeah. Good guy. Great story. And Intel's a good guy. To this day, I will not buy a laptop or a computer with. So here's an important support level, and they breached it.
We're not seeing your chart. Yeah.
Oh, well, that would help, huh?
All right. Hey, I'll take your word for it, though.
You see it now?
Yeah, we see it now.
Okay, so here's an important sort, just prior lows, right? Prior support levels. Today, with the drop on earnings, right, they went through that support level. So I do believe in, like Dan talked about, I think gaps get filled. So there could be a short-term gap fill bullish strategy here. It would have to prove it, right? You start, you know, a day or two up, you know, then, you know, maybe try and take a short swing up into that gap somewhere. I always put my stops, you know, I always trade. Always with a predefined exit, right? We call it a stop. It doesn't have to be a stop market. We look for a support area, you put a stop, and you go, you know, inviolable, right? We're going to close the trade if it goes below it. So then, you know, I look, you know, say if our stop was at today's low, and then we were to take a trade, you know, say it went up a little bit, go, yeah, we think we'll get a gap fill. And then our target would be, you know, something less than the full gap would be up here. And then what we do is look at the reward to risk on that trade. It goes down to the stop. You know, what's that distance versus my entry to the target? I go, gosh, it's 1-to-1. I don't want to trade 1-to-1. I need an advantage, you know, 1.5, 1.2, 2-to-1, 3-to-1, 4-to-1, right? So it's going to be hard to talk me into this trade unless we get a better stop. Right? And, you know, in terms of things to focus on, things to put capital in, I think there's better trades.
Yeah.
And you know, obviously they made some comments that the market didn't like because they had a pretty decent beat. The government just handed them a $8 billion check, not a loan, right? A grant. We want to manufacture chips in the U.S. We don't want to be so dependent on China. Here's $8 billion.
Yeah.
Go do magic. And they must have said something that the people didn't like. And it's like, how could you beat earnings and get an $8 billion check for free and go down? What did you say?
And I have a friend in Phoenix, and I've been by their new factory down there, and it's a big, big deal.
Maybe it will come back. It'd have to be proven, right? The trade would have to make sense.
But when this thing does turn and that red is underneath it green, I wouldn't look at it twice because these people have got the government behind them and they've got the public feeling about onshoring behind them. So it's a good deal. Yeah.
But yeah.
All right, well, we're getting to the top of the hour, you guys. I don't want to run out of time. So Dean, since you're up right now, can you explain how people can get a hold of you and also some of the things you can offer to them?
Yeah, so I just bring it on over here. So if you're interested in the full thing we got going on, here's the website, followmetrades.com. There I am. And there's quite a bit of information. You can contact me. Happy to have a quick chat if you'd like. I do have a kind of a special deal
Lodi,
going, right? Yeah.
I couldn't hear you for a minute there. I don't know if anybody else did, but I can hear you good now.
All right. So David put the homepage. I do have a we have a thing called the Real Traders Club, which is kind of like what we're doing today, except the participants go, hey, what do you guys think of this? What do you think of that? And then we keep a watch list of good trade ideas, define the stops, the entries, the targets. And myself and the other moderator bring in ideas, participants bring in ideas, we share tips and tricks, kind of like we were doing today. How do we approach trading? How do we approach trading? What are some analysis tools? What are some strategies? It's a pretty cool forum. We're there Monday through Thursday for about an hour in the morning, and then you have access to the watch list and a chat forum. And it 147 bucks for a year, so it's a pretty good deal. Right, a good way to get introduced to Follow Me Trades. There it is, form 147 bucks for a year. Join the Real Traders Club, and you get the picks that I'm taking in my own account. That's part of that deal. Pretty good discount. It's meant to be an introduction whole year. So if you're interested, there's a link.
All right. Thank you very much, Dean. And Dan, could you put your information up there and let people know what you can do for them?
Yeah, absolutely. Let me just pull up my web page here. There we go. I'll throw that up there. Share my screen. Okay. Yeah. So we are markettaker.com. And one of the ways that you can get a hold of me is to join our online training tomorrow that is all on trading earnings. And I can put a link to that in the chat box here, if that's all right. Put that out to everyone. You can simply register for that event right there at that GoToWebinar link that I just shared. And yeah, I'm going to go over in greater detail how our system works, really introduce it to you. And those of you who are very, very into trading earnings from this non-directional style, just sort of give you the opportunity to trade together with me every day next week, which is a really, really fun process.
That sounds great. So you got the information for both Dean and Dan up there. So take advantage of that, everybody. And as far as options professor is concerned, just go to optionprofessor.com. And if you'd like to find out what timing indicators I use and strategies I use and learn more about options, I can help you with that. Optionprofessor.com. Hey, Dean, it's great to talk to you again. And I had to throw that Intel thing in there. I would have felt guilty over the weekend if I didn't ask you about
Glad to do it.
it. And Dan, always a pleasure. You guys are both very experienced and knowledgeable guys, so people should really take advantage of that. Have a great weekend, everybody, and let's have a great week next week. I'm going to turn it back over to David now. And have a good day, everybody.
All right, thanks, guys. Yeah, great analysis. This has been a special Friday episode of the Crowd Forecast News Show, but we do a version of this every Monday at 1 p.m. Eastern Time on timingresearch.com. And you can always find the live access there. And also, all of the archives are posted immediately to timingresearch.com and made permanently available there. Also, you can just subscribe to Timing Research on YouTube, Substack, or your favorite podcast app and get the recordings that way as well. So just want to thank my guests again for today, Dean Jenkins of followmetrades.com, Dan Passarelli of markettaker.com, and the option professor of optionprofessor.com. Thanks, everyone.